Good evening, everyone, and welcome to grand final edition of The Rap Show. Sorry about that little pause there. I had to re-click a few buttons, but probably no different to what the Crows needed to do yesterday, unfortunately. Welcoming my partners in crime, Macca and Nikki. How are you going, guys?
Yeah, same as you. Very despondent. You wait all that time for a premiership to come along and you just see go whoosh out the window.
Let's just say it was a very sober drive home from Melbourne today.
Yeah. I don't know whether this will actually cheer you up at all. It's a grand old
no.
Bag.
It's a hot
too
bag.
Soon.
On the tram last night, there was a couple of guys who just decided to sing all the club songs they could remember.
Oh, fair
funny enough.
Didn't
include the Brisbane Lion or GWS or West Coast. It was all the Victoria ones they were singing. Yeah. And they started on that one. And I went, no, it's Double Blues, not Red and Blue.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't get it. Oh, dear, what a shame. Right, so this is not going to be an easy podcast to do because we're all a bit flat.
Because we were shit.
We're all a bit flat, but no squibby. We're not cancelling the show. The show must go on. So the final scores for the 2017 grand final, Richmond 16 goals, 12, 108, defeating a very, very disappointing Adelaide, 8 goals, 12, 60. Adelaide, after being 10 points up with about 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, just fell in a big fat hole, and that was all she wrote, pretty much.
Yeah, Richmond came out with I think a fantastic intensity, and it was just irresistible. And our players, we started to absolutely panic rather than act with a mature head and try to resist and then try and reverse the pattern. We just continued to make very, very stupid errors. We handballed indiscriminately at the feet, wildly, and a lot of panic. And I didn't think we handled the situation very well. And as we'll probably get onto a little bit later, I didn't think the boys upstairs in the coaching panel handled it all that well as either.
How'd it look like at the ground, Nick?
Small, because I was right up the top, which did mean I could see the movement that was going on. And whilst we seemed to kind of nullify Cochin and Mutton and how the hell he got the Norm Smith, I don't know, because that should have gone to Basher Hurley.
Yeah, you're right.
That was ridiculous. We left Hooley free. We covered who we thought we needed to cover and we'd chop them out, but their second tier picked up the slack. They had a very set game plan. Richmond played very well to it. We would get the ball and we'd start a run and then just make poor decisions. It was completely unlike how we were able to pick through Geelong last week. We went back to kicking it to double-teamed forwards. We didn't find a spot. There were some free players they could have kicked to and they would just pick the wrong options.
Yeah, what I saw as a general statement was that we didn't run hard enough to make position, particularly on transition.
Midfielders.
Which meant that we were often forced to kick long down the line. We were doing that off half-back. There was none of the little chippy-chippy stuff through transition. It was just get it to half-back and then belt it long. And, of course, because they had Rance and Co. stationed there, it was ineffective. And most of that came down to our work rate. And the other thing was that we just did not hunt the ball enough. We didn't hunt the ball. Second quarter.
On our team that did.
Well, yeah, obviously Matty Crouch had a good game, but I mean as a general collective, and we'll go through individuals in a minute. As a general collective, we did not hunt possession anywhere near as much as we should have. We did not play, and I think this is probably the most disappointing thing that the club is going to have to deal with, that under real pressure. And I think we mentioned it during the week. We were going to have to operate under some increased pressure because Richmond were obviously a pressure team. But under real pressure, we didn't execute our normal game plan. We didn't use the ball at all well. We relied on individual contests.
Absolutely correct.
unfortunately, that wasn't enough. Right, so let's get through some head-to-head stats. Disposals even enough, 347 to us, 340 to Richmond. You know, we were back to our normal kick-to-handball ratio, 197 to 150. Richmond kicked the ball a lot more, 212 kicks to 128 handballs. And that's their style. They kick it forward, they pressure around the contest, and then they kick it forward again. That's what they do, and that's what they did to good effect. 92 marks to 70. I don't know whether that's... it's not reflected in the contested marks. So certainly where it counted, we didn't outmark them. Tackles fairly even, 70 to 67. Source obviously did very well in the hit-outs, 55 to 28. Although I thought Nankervis didn't do a bad job in the second half around the ground.
Yeah, he did. You're quite right there.
Freeze 19 to 24 in favour of Richmond. Our conversion, our disposals per scoring shot, like we always say, if we're not down around the 12, it's no good. And we're up at 17.35. Our inside 50 effectiveness was just shot to pieces. 39 clearances to 45. 41 rebound 50s to 34 our way. Inside 50s, 49 to 58. You're never going to win a game like that. But now the telling stats. Contested possessions, Adelaide 140, Richmond 170. That's a plus 30 to Richmond. I can't remember the last time we got smashed inside like we did on the weekend.
Yeah, and what made that worse is at halftime, I think the gap was 10 or less. So I think it was less than 10. So we were absolutely slaughtered in contested possession in the second half.
Yep. Definitely. Our disposal efficiency ended up being at 72.3%, but that's because there was just a lot of back and forth handball trying to get clear of congestion. We didn't use the ball particularly well, and often were handballing to players in under real pressure or flat footed, and it wasn't very creative. It was more a hot potato style disposal, really. Contested marks 10 to us, 15 to Richmond. Marks inside 50. I'm surprised that we're even in the end, 13 apiece. Clearances 39 to 45, which was made up of 12 centre clearances to 14 and 27 stoppage clearances to 31. And yeah, that's pretty much the tail of the tape. We turned it over a lot more than we usually do, and more than Richmond did, 78 to 72. And my only worry for the whole game was whether we were going to be able to execute under real pressure, and as it turned out, we couldn't.
Yeah, the other thing too is we would have had to modify our game plan somewhat, because Hardwick was smart enough to have one, sometimes two, just loose players for Richmond sitting in around the centre of the ground, which we... just denying us that normal access that we do, running through the centre of the ground with the short passes, which in turn forces to go a lot around the sides. And then he actually played with a very light forward line and one man back in defence and a couple of men hanging around the centre, which just made it very awkward for us, and we didn't handle that at all. And in their game plan, as you said, they kick it forward, then they all run at it. They try and hold it there, and then they all regroup again and try to go through that whole procedure. Eventually, they get a shot at goal. And whereas we have a totally different game plan, and what we do like to do is, and we did it very, very well against Geelong, where we went through the centre of the ground most of the time or brought it back to the centre of the ground. We just couldn't do that against Richmond, and they just carved us up.
I would have to say that Sloaney was probably one of the worst defenders in that. He couldn't, you could just see the occasion got to him. He was double grabbing and dropping stuff. He was one of the worst ones at handballing feet. And quite rightly, I saw actually Lynch having an absolute go at him when they scored a goal, because it was his man that he didn't follow down into defence.
His man got three goals.
Yep.
Yeah, he had a few mates as well. What I noticed, Macca, on what you were saying before, is that one thing that I noticed continually with what Richmond were doing was when we were moving the ball out of half back, pardon me, they would set up a grid 20 to 30 metres away from where the ball was, and they would basically cut off all the short avenues. So it just basically forced us to kick long. You know, we didn't seem to be spreading hard enough, but Richmond also had a bit of a setup, you know, within the vicinity of that 20 to 30 metre pass from the ball carrier. And rarely was there an easy outlet, particularly those nice little diagonals that we like to do. They were completely cut off by Richmond all day.
They kind of set up more like a triangle.
Yeah, you could see it. I freeze framed a few players this afternoon, and it was evident that this was a particular move by Richmond, because every time you freeze framed it, and there was 4 to 5 Richmond players in a grid, cutting off all angles within 20 to 30 meters of the ball carrier, forcing us to kick longer where they had their taller players stationed, and as a consequence, we just found it very difficult to move the ball.
One thing that I was disappointed
about was, as a consequence, we didn't try to actually move the ball by hand a little bit more. You know, we got sucked into playing the way Richmond wanted us to play, and because they were cracking in harder, it was a double barrel, really. Not only were we not able to move the ball the way that we wanted to, but then as stoppages were created, we weren't really cracking in hard enough.
Yeah, I was actually thinking during the game, how can we get past that? And there were probably two thoughts or schools of thought running through my mind. One was the fact that we could have sort of played around with the ball a little bit more in the back lines, trying to draw players down to create an opening, or the other one would be to charge via handball at that line, the 20, 30-metre back line, and get much closer to it to kick longer over the top of where they had their players positioned. So, but we didn't try anything like that. So we just kept on doing the same. Look, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got, and that's what we got for the whole game.
Yeah, let's not forget, too, though, that I think there was a fair element of blokes not running hard enough.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. We'll be naming those, of course, as we run through each player.
Yeah, and I think that contributed to us getting bogged down. Players weren't aggressive enough with their running. They weren't aggressive enough with their ball movement. And they're just not willing to take a risk. And yes, it's grand final, but our game plan is built on a certain style of ball movement, and you've got to be able to execute that under total pressure, you know, away from home, in the game with the biggest prize of the year. And unfortunately, our blokes went back to some old habits. Let's go through some players, Matty Crouch, 37 touches, 20 kicks, 17 handballs, 5 tackles, 6 inside 50s, 5 clearances, 7 rebound 50s, 12 contested possessions, a little bit down on disposal efficiency, 62, 6 score involvements, 4 intercepts. If anyone could hold his head high for a 4-quarter effort, I think it's probably Matt.
Yeah, clearly our best player, and a 4-quarter effort by Matt. They did actually try and put him under a lot more pressure than normal, but to Matty's credit, even though it did affect his efficiency somewhat, 37 possessions in that particular game where we, to all intents and purposes, were pretty well trounced. I thought full credit to Matty, and he can hold his head up high.
And should have had some votes in the Norm Smith. Even though, yes,
it was a pretty comprehensive beating, Nick.
It was a comprehensive beating, but being there at that game, his efforts, yes, you talk about his disposal efficiency being down, he was still trying to get that ball and actually trying to create something. He was let down by his teammates.
Oh, no doubt. It was certainly our best. Nearly a team high metres gained as well, but yeah, probably not surprising that he didn't figure in any sort of Norm Smith calculations. Brother Brad went back to some old habits, in my opinion. 29 touches, but only 9 kicks, 20 handballs. 6 tackles, 7 clearances. He went at 65%. 17 contested possessions was a good result from Brad. But I didn't feel like he was terribly creative. And I felt like he was panicked with a lot of his disposals. Whilst his disposal count was up, I didn't think it was one of Brad's better games.
Well, it was good in terms of his effort. And that he was one of the ones that I wouldn't knock for his effort. But you are right. His disposal efficiency was, and sometimes it was very poor, actually. He, handballs to nobody, handballs at feet. And I think, didn't he have 20 handballs, I think it was? And some of those were bloody terrible handballs and totally unnecessary. In fact, I would have rather seen the ball hacked forward by foot a lot of the time when we did handball.
Well,
yeah, he panicked.
He did.
He
panic,
panicked with the pressure. He still kept putting in, and he put pressure back on them, but it was obvious that he didn't quite cope with the occasion, which was stark contrast to his younger brother.
Yeah, and a couple of times too, Brad, rather than picking the ball up, he'd soccer it forward indiscriminately and that sort of stuff. And it wasn't a very decisive game from Brad at all, and we didn't get a lot of value for his touches, really.
I thought he got a pass anyhow.
Well, 29 touches, still 29 touches, and he did crack in with 7 clearances and 17 contested possessions. So he didn't have a terrible game by any stretch, but we needed someone to be creative and get some run going, and unfortunately it wasn't Brad today. Lairdy, 27 disposals. I felt like he started really well. 11 kicks, 16 handballs, 9 marks, 3 inside 50s, only 6 contested possessions, but his disposal efficiency was up again around the 89%, and 7 intercepts. I felt like he tried hard, and I felt like his first quarter and a half was really good, but as with much of the back six, they kind of got swamped a bit as Richmond gained ascendancy.
Yeah, they did. And in some degree, you can't totally blame the backman at all because of the fact that the problem was upfield in the midfield and in particular in some of the, and we'll deal with some of those forward players that put no pressure on the player clearing the ball. And then I thought they just cleared it too easily there. And that, in turn, put a lot of pressure on our backman because the ball was being delivered without a lot of pressure being put on the person delivering the ball. But I would say that Lairdy, definitely a reasonably good game and under the circumstances. And he can walk off the ground saying, at least I gave it my best.
He did have some quality possessions even into the last. He was still cracking in and trying right till the end, even though it was very obvious that, yep, the game was over. And that was pleasing to see. But I agree with what you two have just said, that a lot of our back line, because a lot of those goals were kicked at the end where I was sitting, and they were trying to do the best they could, but the midfield did let them down in not putting on that further pressure or not following up their players into the back line. I mean, and that's just a cardinal sin.
I saw Lukey Brown have a crack at a couple during the course of the game for that very reason, not following players in.
Yeah, and they're trying to cover a number of players.
Yeah. Rory Sloane's the next one, 21 disposals, 11 and 10, had 4 marks, kicked a couple of goals early, 6 tackles, 5 inside 50s, 5 clearances, 12 contested possessions, went at 76%, 6 score involvements and 5 intercepts, but turned it over a bit 6 times.
Fumbled, not a big game player.
Just didn't.
Cajun got to him.
Didn't handle the pressure, Rory.
Nope.
Started well, though. He had a reasonably good start to the game.
No.
Nicky,
still really fumbly.
Yes, I accept that, but in terms of putting his body in, he got a couple of goals, and I think they were both in the first quarter, weren't they?
Yeah.
He nearly stuffed them up.
But he didn't stuff them up, Ricky. In the end, he got them. So I would say that his contribution in the first quarter was good, but I thought that as the game went on, his contribution just lessened more and more and more. And worse than that, his opponent, who went to him, got 3 goals.
They did put him up forward for a little bit in the third, and that actually helped a bit. He was held considerably. But he was still cracking in that little thing. We just couldn't get it forward because that pressure was getting to him. His disposal was quite poor once he managed to get his hands on the ball and didn't double grab it.
Put it this way, when you get a 5-game player in Jack Graham standing you and he's had more impact than you have, well, you haven't got much chance of winning the game when you're only supposed to be our best player.
Yeah.
Spot on.
That said, Jack Graham had some pretty good support in the midfield, whereas I don't know whether Sloane had much. And speaking of which, my first brickbat for the podcast, Richard Douglas, 14 kicks, 6 handballs for 20 touches, 2 marks, 8 tackles, 6 inside 50s, 4 clearances, 6 contested possessions only, when at 60% disposal efficiency, and turned it over 6 times. He was out there because he was the guy that would not one take it. He was the guy that fell over every time he was under any sort of pressure at all. And he was the senior player that needed to stand up, as he has done to his credit in the second half of the year. But when the team really needed a senior player to step up, Richard Douglas was found wanting. And I think it was a critical effort by Dougie not to stand up in the heat of grand final because he was part of that middle tier of players that needed to stand up, and he was disgusting, I thought.
Well, a bit harsh in the sense that he did have 8 tackles, and I thought his work rate was not too bad. But you are right, he fumbled a bit and he slipped. A lot of the time when he slipped, he did get up and kick the ball, but of course he's kicking under pressure. And I'm not trying to say he had a great game, but I think you judged him just a little bit harshly. But put it this way.
Have you watched it again?
No, I can't stand right. to watch it again. Well,
I watched it again this afternoon, so I took particular note, and Dougie faltered under pressure.
Look, that's probably correct. But what I do think, though, that he put in some effort, and which I'm going to really bag some players later who I don't think put in enough effort. And maybe the effort wasn't good enough. But and for next year, he could well be replaced by another player if we can get hold of him, in Gibbs. But, I think Douglas was just one of many who had not a lot of impact on the game, even though they may have tried.
Nick?
Oh, as I said, I wasn't sure he was actually out there. He was unsighted, except when he stuffed it up.
Well, surely you saw him when he slipped over, Nick. He slipped over a few times.
He wasn't the only one.
Yeah. All right, I'm just going down in disposal order, so no particular good or bad order, but I thought Jake Kelly battled.
Had hamstring tightness.
I felt like he played a reasonable game, Jake, under some fairly intense pressure and lack of assistance. And I think that comment from mine anyway is pretty much applicable to the entire back six. I think they battled manfully. Jake had 9
kicks. I agree with that.
9 kicks, 11 handballs for 20, had 6 marks, a couple of clearances, 4 rebound 50s, 9 contested possessions, win 80% disposal efficiency, and 7 intercepts. I just felt like he battled hard, Jake Kelly, and he wasn't disgraced.
I don't think any of our back line were disgraced. I thought they all put in as hard as they could. But, you know, when you're playing in the back line, you're not making the play. The play's being made up further up the ground, and your opponent is also waiting for him to do something as well. Although, you know, you might do the intercept thing, which Lever normally does, etc. But you're not in control of the game. You're actually trying to save the game. And unfortunately, the lack of pressure on the players delivering the ball at times was terrible. I mean, absolutely terrible. And these guys are battling their heart out, but they're just pissing into the wind, to put it very bluntly. And I thought Kelly, he tried like all the backmen did, and I thought he had a reasonable game given the circumstances.
I want to give credit to Richmond here because the way that they tried to work around our back six, Martin's goal that he got when he was on Brown was as soon as they saw Hardigan go off for a rest, they waited and waited, and then Martin headed down there, and we had to put Brown on him. They did that very cleverly. A couple of things that Revolt was doing with Talia was that his teammates would come in and actually knock Talia off away so Revolt could actually then get loose. So they worked quite well to combat our back six.
Nikki, just jog my memory. That one where Martin had Brownie one out, that was just before half time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a piss weak piece of coaching by whoever was managing our bench rotations to have Hardigan go off the ground with 2 minutes to go after Richmond.
Was it 2 minutes?
It wasn't.
I think there was a bit longer to go.
No, it was the last. It was the last goal they kicked for the quarter.
No, I reckon they. I reckon they got another one.
It was a bad mismatch. Anyhow, it was a shocking.
It was the worst time for Hardigan to go off the ground, and not do anything about it. Like Richmond had just kicked a couple, and they've left Luke Brown in a mismatch with Dusty one out in the goal square. Poor.
What they did was Richmond was that Brownie had another opponent till just before the ball was bounced, and then they just did a really quick switch.
Yeah, but they should have been onto that. Like that's not a difficult move that Richmond made to try and isolate Dusty with Hardigan out of the picture, and they should have been onto it.
I thought Hardigan had Martin's measure and had done, did a very good job on him. And you're quite right. It should never have been that situation. It should never been allowed.
I think we actually pressured Martin really well. He got off the chain, you know, a couple of times towards the end when it was pretty much junkholes. But for those first three quarters, we actually held him quite well.
Yeah, I didn't think he was the cause of our demise. He had a good game. I didn't think he was Norm Smith, but I felt he had a good game. But I didn't think he was the difference. Tommy Lynch is the next cab off the rank. 12 kicks, 6 handballs, 5 marks, 4 tackles, only 4 contested possessions, went at 78% disposal efficiency. Largely ineffective Tommy Lynch, and Richmond did what both GWS and Geelong failed to do. That's actually bloody man up on him.
Correct. He had a very ineffectual game. He almost zero impact on the game.
Yeah, he needed to work harder.
He
apparently has got that great tank. And you needed to run to smarter positions.
Yeah, that said,
he was running so out wide, it was ridiculous.
Well, you know, this is where playing on the wider ground might have messed up a couple of blokes' running patterns. But I felt one of the biggest problems about Tommy Lynch's game was the fact that Tex didn't run because we've been so Lynch-focused in our transition. We haven't been using Tex anywhere near as much in transition, and Tex needed to get on his bike, and I'll get to Tex in a minute, but Tex needed to get on his bike to allow a different avenue and to make Richmond think about how we were moving the ball forward. But anyway, next cab off the rank, Rory Atkins. I want this lad traded because he is a weak-as-piss footballer. 8 kicks, 9 handballs for 17 disposals, 4 marks, 3 tackles, 6 clangers, only the 5 contested possessions, went at 82% disposal efficiency. It's because he never took a risk with that much vaunted disposal the whole match. I thought Rory Atkins was disgusting. He never went for a hard ball, he never went for a 50-50, and if he wants to be an outside player, he's got to get 30 touches. The guy got 17 touches, and I thought he was piss weak.
Well, no argument for me. I've been one of his greatest critics all year, soft as marshmallow, and I thought that was a terrible performance. And I'm like you. I'd be quite happy to see him traded because You're never going to win a premiership when you when you're playing a grand final and you've got a bloke who goes as soft as that. And you, and just to get a classic example, it was the mental weakness of the guy as well. When he's running into an open goal and he's kicked those all year, and it just a normal little drop punt on the run from about 45 metres out, no pressure. And it, where did it finish? It finished out of bounds. It didn't even, I don't know even that it made it out on the full. I think it bounced before it went out. It was a shocking bloody kick.
And no, yeah. It went out on the full.
Okay, but mentally weak, absolutely mentally weak.
Nikki?
Yeah, can't disagree with what you guys are saying there at all.
Yeah. Charlie Cameron, I thought, tried hard. Lacks a bit of class, lacks composure, but I felt like particularly...
Got a knock about a minute or so in. And
got a knee
does,
to the side of the calf.
Yeah, and that impacts. So he couldn't quite get his burst of speed, but God, that kid was still trying.
Yeah, I felt like he tried.
He did try, but I think that cork calf just a little bit off of him. And and that showed in... because. He was never as clear as of these opposition as he normally is, and I think it did affect him. But he did try.
Yep.
Not a great game.
No, not a great game. 16 touches, 2 marks, 5 tackles, 5 inside 50s, 4 clearances, 13 contested possessions though, Macca.
We said he did try. He did try.
56% disposal efficiency, though, so disposal let him down. 5 score involvements. He tried, I think, is how we can describe his game.
And he's the type of player that needs others around him to also be being involved, because that's the type of player he is. Any other type, that type of player in another team, exactly the same things required. They can't do it on their own.
Yeah. Next one, David McKay, 8-7 for 15, 2 marks, 5 tackles, 4 rebound 50s, only 2 contested possessions in a high contested game. When he went at 73%, didn't do much else. A disappointing game after a rich vein of form from D-Mac.
A sub-average game, and... yeah, as you said, not up to the standard of what he'd set in the previous few weeks. And if I was him, I'd be disappointed in my game.
Swap for Seedsman towards the end. And Seeds was actually doing a little bit better out of the back lines, but then we also missed Seed on the wing.
Yeah. In the end, we needed more from McKay, and he didn't cope with the physical pressure, which is often the knock on D-Mac. He doesn't squib contests, but often he just doesn't have the physical presence to be able to stay over the ball.
Correct.
And I felt like that was, I felt like that was a big problem. Sauce, I think, tried to impose himself on the game early by getting forward, tried to help our defence by getting back and taking a couple of marks, did well in ruck, but ultimately... I felt like Nankervis in the second half had a bit more impact. Source had the 15 touches, 8-7. Only the 3 marks, 49 hit-outs. I just felt like Source could have done a little bit more around the ground. And I didn't see him used in transition at all, so I don't know how that broke down.
Yeah, you're right. Totally right. His first half was pretty good, really, and I thought that he was... one of our better players up to half time, but Nankervis did. I thought had the edge in the second half, and I thought Source tried to get into the game, but they didn't. They didn't use him that often, so he gets a pass from me for effort and a reasonable game, but not one of his real dominant games.
There were some interesting decisions that didn't go his way in the second half that should have, with the way Nankervis was dealing with him.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, full on, 2 hands in his back as a throw-in's coming in, pushes him completely under the ball. Tunneled him another time. No freeze whatsoever. So that was when Nankervis was then able to run and get away with it, because he's done something illegal. But Nankervis, to his credit, still kept trying and running. His goal he kicked was on Jenkins, and I'm waiting to hear what comes out of your mouth, Phoenix, regarding Jenkins, where he just wasn't sitting on him close enough.
Yeah. Maybe just be out of Phoenix's mouth.
The thing that disappointed me, I think, the most out of Sam's game, and it's not necessarily Sam's fault, but Richmond all season have been playing Greek and other mismatches as second ruck. And what disappointed me is that we didn't have a plan for when Nankervis was off the ground. And time and time again, when Sauce was up against a second stringer, he would end up putting it either to their advantage or to no advantage. They just didn't actually seem to know what to do when Sauce was clearly going to get the hit out. And there were so many times where Sauce could have belted it to a bloke away from the contest and try to open things up, but because they didn't seem to have a plan, they didn't seem to have trained for that eventuality, all he'd do would be kind of confused, drop to the feet, sort of, like, you know, tap to the foot of the pack. It surprised me that we didn't have a plan for those times when Nankervis wasn't on the ground.
Yeah, what you're saying is we should have really been capitalising on that by having a massive advantage in height and therefore a massive advantage in being able to place the ball to our benefit, but that didn't eventuate. And maybe we got the tap, but the tap was not...
was it ineffective?
Yeah, but you raise a very good point there. In days of old, ruckmen would often just pull a great big punch forward out of the blue. They never do it now.
Yeah, no, and that, like, it's not as if them using Grigg is a surprise. They've been doing it all year, you know. So surely you have it. Surely you trained for those circumstances, and we didn't seem to.
Well, as you said, there should have been a pre-plan what to do and how to capitalise on that situation when you're up against a midget compared to yourself. I mean, it really should have been, like a 70-80% chance that we take the ball every time.
Yep. Where are we at? The seed, I thought, was pretty ineffective, really. I didn't feel like he had any real impact on the game. He only had 15 touches, which on a wing is not enough. Took the 5 marks, had the 4 tackles, 3 rebound 50s. As you mentioned, Nicky was sent back at times. Only the 4 contested possessions, though, in a highly contested game. Again, that's probably not good enough. And only the 1 intercept. So he carried the ball a bit, 400-odd metres, which is not bad, but we needed him to get more of it.
Yeah, he was trying. So he was one of those I did notice actually running and trying, but wasn't spotted. We went back to that where we've highlighted this before, in that we would go to 2-on-1s instead of thinking it through and spotting up the player who was loose. He was trying to create run. He just wasn't used well by his teammates.
Yeah, but he still only had a game, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a low pass for Seed.
Yeah. I thought Hardigan tried hard, 11 and 4 for 15, took 6 marks, 5 clangers, however.
A couple of those were free kicks that shouldn't have been paid against him.
Yeah. He did have a couple of trademark brain snaps, but I thought he tried really hard.
One of our better players, actually.
I would have had him in probably our top half a dozen. Did a lot right. Did quite well on Martin when Martin was deep, I felt. And wasn't the worst. 7 intercepts as well. Jakey Lever, I thought, also tried hard without having a massive influence on the game.
I was actually a little worried about him because last week against Geelong, he looked really shaky. And I thought he didn't cope well last week. This week was actually, it was a little step up from it.
Last week the Cats really made an effort to chop him out.
Yeah.
Whereas it didn't feel like Richmond were making the same effort to chop him out. It was more about just one-on-one accountability in the Richmond forward line this week. But, you know, he still took the 8 marks and had the six contested possessions, won 80%, the 7-1 percentage. So wasn't our worst. I, you know, probably someone that could walk off saying he did the best he could.
Not a dominant game. No. I didn't think and maybe that's just the way the game was played, that he may not have got the opportunity. But some games you see him really dominate in the air and with these intercepts, but maybe the way that Richmond ran the ball up, he didn't get as many opportunities. Certainly, I didn't think he was as noticeable as he is when he's playing a really top game.
I think it's a bit hard for an intercept marker when the ball's coming in such a chaotic fashion. I mean, they weren't terribly clean or consistent with the way they were coming in. It was just hack, crash, bash, you know. And hard for a third man up to sort of get in position for those.
I mean, the smother he did was great in that shot after the siren.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, you're quite right about some of the ways that Richmond came in. And they don't call it the old chaos ball for nothing, because it does cause chaos. Yeah. Because you can't defend what you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and you get some fickle bounces as well and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Not our day.
And we did get not a couple of fickle bounces.
Ball hated it.
Yeah, I thought, again, Luke Brown, I thought, tried hard.
He kept Rioli well and truly out of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, did his job.
Huey Greenwood had a little purple patch at one point during the game, and I thought, oh, here we go.
The second quarter?
Yeah.
No, first quarter. First quarter dominated, I thought, and then I think he conned us with his calf, and I think his calf after that caught up with him, and he wasn't capable.
Shouldn't have been played, Macca.
No, I totally agree.
Should not
totally
have agree. Been played, because he's carried that now, if the reports are right, for 3 weeks.
Yep, and because he really well the first quarter, and I thought, he's in for a beauty. But he gradually disappeared because he couldn't run, and he couldn't run as hard as he was early.
Why do we insist on playing unfit players in big matches? And it's not as if Huey is like a 200-game stalwart. He's a fucking rookie. Why did they play him?
Because at least he knows what a contested ball is.
That's not the point, though. When are we going to learn as a club? I know you can carry niggles, but a calf is not generally a niggle. A calf can be really debilitating. It limits your ability to run and push off. And I just don't know why they played him. I just don't.
Well, one of the articles I read in one of the newspapers made that comment that he had an outstanding first quarter, but appeared to hurt his calf. Well, we know that his calf wasn't right when he went in, or there was a possibility that his calf wasn't right, and it was certainly a risky situation. And as you say, we roll the dice on these things every year, and every year we get shot up the arse.
Well, he only played 59% time on ground, so not only is he ineffective when he's on the ground, but he's messing up your rotations because you're having to baby him through the match.
Yeah, it's certainly not through ability. It was through
It's purely a selection issue, that one. We all think, I can't wait to see Hugh have another pre-season and be a more permanent part of our midfield rotations. But this particular game, in this particular final series, we had some options. We had Curtly Hampton come back in. He was playing all right. We got Miller, obviously. He's got his own limitations, but at least he was fit. I don't know why we've. I don't know if we're carrying a rookie for contested ball numbers, then that's an indictment on blokes like Richard Douglas.
Correct.
Right, next one. Taylor Walker, 9 kicks, 1 handball for 10, took 6 marks, kicked a couple of goals, 7 contested possessions. I was really, really disappointed with Taylor's game.
Very disappointing effort by the captain. If you compare the efforts by the two captains, I thought that their captain, he acted like a captain, and he showed by his efforts, trying to lead the way with his efforts. Whereas Taylor Walker, I just thought, he just doesn't work hard enough. Just doesn't seem to work hard enough. And I was very disappointed in his efforts, and I thought that when the captain plays like that, I think it sets a tone for the rest of the team.
For me, he was one of the few forwards who was actually leading and trying to do something, though. So you guys are saying he didn't work hard enough. He was double-teamed, or that what they were doing with him was that he had Asprey on him, and then they would set the little triangle around because they knew we were going to pass to him. And so, of course, they'd just take the ball and off it would go once it would come down to the ground.
Because he didn't take a fucking mark all day. Like, he was soft, Nick. His efforts at the ball were half-hearted and soft. He was too concerned about the bloke hanging off him. He didn't chest front on the ball when the ball was coming towards him. He didn't push up the ground far enough. And I was extremely disappointed by his game. And he missed a couple of shots at goal. That yes, they were not easy shots at goal. But he missed. He didn't even look like they didn't shave the post or miss by a foot. He missed them by plenty, and they were shots early on goal that he needed to be able to kick.
Nicky,
he was actually kicking those. We were actually kicking really well down that end of the ground in, like, when we were doing the touch on the ground beforehand, and it just completely went out the window as soon as the game actually started.
Well, Nicky, first shot for goal, with all due respect, looked like you kicked it rather than him.
No, it still went further than what I can kick.
Yeah, probably not as straight, though, Nick. It was terrible. It was a terrible kick. And if he's not a marking forward who can kick goals, then what is he? That's the question.
I think that broken finger.
A broken finger doesn't make you kick like a bloody three-legged donkey.
No, that doesn't. But his marking and his clunking, we know that that's where he gets his confidence from often. You know, that's what we want to see is he does that little lead up at the start and he clunks that first one and we know he's on. It's impacted him lately.
We haven't got room for Tex to be on or off. No. You need consistent performers, and Tex hasn't been a consistent performer, in my opinion, all year. And if he's like, and we'll talk about the other dickhead in a minute, but if Tex has only got a couple of KPIs that he has to adhere to, take marks, kick goals. You know, he needs to be able to do that as a lead up forward, because we can't rely on Lynchy all the time to be that conduit. Tex has to provide alternatives. And he wasn't presenting enough during the game.
I agree with you. And because the other thing too is, the one thing Tex normally does is when he has the ball, he's one of the smartest handballers in the game. And some of his handball is outstanding when he's on. And but he wasn't getting the ball enough to do that. So when you look at our three big blokes in the forward line, Nicky, shocking, just shocking.
Yeah, well hold your fire just for a second, Macca. We're nearly there. We're nearly there, mate. Then you can have some cathartic words. Riley Knight, I thought, started well, but really faded out of the game. He had 5 and 4, took 5 marks, kicked a point, 3 tackles, only the 4 contested posies. Just wasn't involved enough after a really bright start.
Had that great run from Charlie's kick and the ball just bounced.
Oh, around. That was unfortunate, that was.
That was brilliant piece of play. He actually ran from the other wing.
Yeah, look, I think he's a player of the future, and he didn't have much contribution or much impact on this game at all, really. But
he was keeping Cochin fairly quiet. He was doing that role.
Yeah, and he's a good enough player to be in the side. It's just wasn't a big one by him.
No, and he needs to, hopefully he gets a pre-season under his belt. He needs to build that tank up a bit. All right.
Yeah, it's still pretty good, but he can.
Yeah, but he needs to be able to.
There's another level he can go to that'll be and get him consistently more into games.
Because I'd love to see Riley Knight eventually be a wingman, because I reckon he's the sort of bloke that can go into a few midfield rotations, like centre bounce rotations. But I reckon he's handy on a wing, but he needs to build up his engine to be able to go up and back.
Very good point. Instead of Buddy Atkins.
Yeah. Oh.
And we do have confidence that he's actually going to be involved in the midfield because we use him to tag a midfielder.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Eddie Betts, only the 7, 4 and 3. Kicked one goal, which was an opportunist goal early. And I, yeah, don't know what to make of Eddie's game. I felt poor game. Well, I felt like we didn't actually. Eddie was one of the players that I felt that we could use to try and change things up a bit. We didn't see him come off halfback at all. We didn't see him start in the centre at all. I would have thought that getting Eddie into the game in a secondary role was something that they could have done when things were getting away from us in the third quarter, and I was a bit disappointed that we just basically left him up forward.
Well, it might have been a good thing to do what you're suggesting, because he was doing nothing up forward, and that we weren't doing too well in the centre of the ground either. So it would have been good to try it. It had, in fact, you know, I think our coaching staff in general have to get a rap over the knuckles for a poor performance, and that's not just us saying that. That's been said by many of the members of the press, that the coaching staff didn't have a big day either.
Yeah, I didn't think they were terribly decisive in the coach's box. And I felt like using Eddie was one of the things they could have done. Yeah, Josh Jenkins, 3 and 4 for 7. Took 5 marks, must have been in the pre-game warm-up. 6 hit-outs from our much-vaunted second ruckman. 3 contested possessions. 10 metres gained for the game.
Yeah, well, when they're talking about his salary at $5.50 per annum, I hope they're talking about $5.50, because that's what he was worth for a year. That was just one of the most, a great big lump of bloody jelly out there doing absolutely bugger all, and a disgrace to the team, disgrace to himself. And, well, Jenkins, just bloody wake up, mate. You're not the player you think you are.
It was interesting because my parents, on the train ride home that they were doing, and there were a few people talking, and they actually said that he had apparently broken a rib, but I haven't seen anything about that at all. But that was the rumor going around. I don't think I believe it.
Well, he must have passed wind too strongly or something, because he didn't do it by getting bruised.
Nick, we know that if he'd broke a rib, that there would have been a stretcher on out on the ground. Because he wouldn't have been able to play on. And look, I don't like, this is a day after a grand final, like, you know, obviously
we're
a little
hurting.
bit emotional, but my criticisms about Josh have been clear and consistent throughout the season, and I just felt like his grand final performance epitomised everything that I don't like about Josh Jenkins and the way he plays the game. He was soft. He allowed Rance and Vlaston to dominate him. He'd stop presenting. He didn't work hard enough off the ball. He didn't work hard to create forward pressure, forward 50 pressure. He's just lazy. And for someone who is his size, we can't afford to have both Tex and Jenkins in our forward line, because neither of them are contested marking beasts, and neither of them put on great pressure, defensive pressure inside forward 50. One of them has to go out of that setup. And when you've got Andy Otten in there as well, which I thought, I didn't mind the selection, except that we never actually took advantage of the fact that we had mismatches in height, and then we became slow. But when you had Andy Otten in there as well, we just could not keep the ball in our forward 50, and Jenkins' effort was a big part of that. And I don't know whether Jenkins has actually got it in him to fulfil his KPIs as a position forward, which is to take mark and kick goals. He cannot take contested mark and kick goals, and I don't give a flying rat's ass how many goals he kicked. And that's what everyone used to just say to me every time I criticise him. Oh, but he kicked 60 goals in 2016 or whatever the hell it was. I couldn't care less, because anyone could have kicked those goals. What we need him to do is take marks, make the opposition centre-half back accountable, and put pressure on when it's his turn to put pressure on, and he just does not fulfill any of those KPIs.
Well, certainly he is guilty of being, I thought, the laziest player on the ground, and he did. A guy his size should be causing, and he is very mobile, so he should be causing chaos with his body down there. But, yeah, no impact at all.
Yeah, he should have been running a lot more. Once we identified that Tex was being double-teamed, it was up to him to not just stand there and wait, to get on his bike and actually become another target.
Well, and that's my biggest criticism of him, Nick, that he can't impose himself on a game. When he kicks bags of goals, it's because he's on the end of good work. But he can never take the game by the scruff of the neck like a Jono Brown or a Nick Revolt or, you know, someone like that, a big player up forward that can just take the game by the scruff of the neck. He will never do that. And for the amount of money that we're paying him over the period that we're paying him for, I don't know what we're going to do about it, because we can't have him and Tex in the same forward line, in my opinion.
You can, but they actually have to give a hell of a lot more than what they both give. It's simply down to work rate. And Jenkins, I just think his work rate was really, really poor. And you know, I think the best way is not to pick him if he's not. And let him have a few runs in the B's next year if he's not going to give 100% when he's out there on the ground. I think he's got a lot more ability than what we see, because he can run and he's not the strongest overhead mark, so he's got to be leading to do that. But it still comes back to work rate.
Yeah.
And when he was actually dropped, he actually went back to the SANFL and he didn't drop his head, he pulled his finger out.
Yeah.
And then when he came back in, we actually saw a new and improved Josh Jenkins doing all the things that he was told he needed to work on. So I think maybe you're right. He needs that drop back every so often so he doesn't get complacent.
Well, he needs to harden up, because he's a grown man that doesn't need to be sent to the naughty corner every couple of weeks just to remind him how to play football. My issue with Josh has always been that he's no good when the ball is not on his terms. So when the ball isn't kicked to his advantage, or when he has to beat a player one-on-one where he's not in the optimum position, Josh Jenkins is next to useless. And that's the problem. When things are going his way, when the ball bounces his way, or when the ball is put to his advantage, then he's okay. But he will not win you a 50-50 contest, because he just hasn't got the mental fortitude, the guts and the drive to beat an opponent when things aren't necessarily in his favour. And that's my problem with Jenkins, and that's exactly what was highlighted on the weekend, that he could not impose himself on the game to any degree.
Well, impose would be a long way away from what his game was.
Exactly.
He didn't even really participate in the game.
Yeah. Look, I don't think we need to labour the point too much more. It is what it is.
Andy Otten, I think that was a selection issue. And in hindsight, we should have had Miller.
I think if we moved the ball faster and cleaner into our forward 50, it could have been a real advantage of us, for us having another marking player. But the issue was, because we were bombing it in, they were able to take a lot of marks in our forward 50, and there wasn't a lot of scraps there for the small forwards. And again, our mids weren't working hard enough. We weren't able to maintain field position when the ball was in our forward line. It just came scooting out again.
See, I wanted Keith, because for me, Keith is taller than Otten, he's faster than Otten, he's more agile than Otten, and he would have actually made Rance a lot more accountable than what Otten did.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been the worst selection. I think we probably needed to go in a bit smaller, to be honest. Otten was probably the right selection against Geelong, the way they set up. But against Richmond, I mean, I would have probably preferred Mental over Miller, but at least Miller gave us a little bit more speed, although not much hardness. But yeah, anyway...
And you're right about the hardness too, because he's not the hardest player. He's got to hard toughen up a bit too. And that's the one thing that, if we sum the game up, really, is that Richmond played with an intensity that, and a desperation and as you say, the word pressure. They just pressurised us into making error after error, and we just didn't stand up to it. We didn't take the pressure, and it reminded me horribly of when we played Sydney in that game up at the SCG last year, when they just bashed us with pressure, and that's what Richmond did to us. And when you take it man for man, they're not a better side, but what they do, they have a game plan which is built on that pressure, and what it has, it's worked when the matches really count. They made Geelong look silly in the end, and they certainly made us look silly in the end. And to me, I one summary of how did I feel after the game. From our team point of view, our team's perspective, I felt cheated. I felt let down. And, you know, we've supported them all year. And when the biggest game of the year comes along, they failed, and they failed miserably, and they didn't back us up. So I was very disappointed with the game.
Final thoughts, Nick?
Just kind of shows you exactly how hard it is to win a grand final. But if you're the slightest bit off, and the other teams, they want it, because they're going to want it just as much as you did, and we did that little start. We got on the board. It seemed to be, yes, this is the intensity. And just everything just slowly started to drop. And that was history. We were still a ridiculous chance in the last quarter, which we had no right to be.
We were no chance, Nikki.
Oh, no. We only had kicked 5 goals in 20 minutes.
We were no
chance. And we know our team can do that when they're playing well. But they were not. That's why I said we were a ridiculous chance, but it was still a chance.
That's why I said no chance, because the way we were playing, Nikki, we would have to play another 2 hours to get 5 goals.
Yeah, but don't forget, we scored 50 and a half against Collingwood. I'm with Nikki. I still thought, at the beginning of the last, I thought, shit, if Richmond just think they've already won it and we start getting a bit adventurous and get
and
a couple early.
A bit.
Yeah, but no. Never mind. All right. Well, look.
Well,
I think.
Well done to Richmond.
Yeah. Look, well done to Richmond. Absolutely. They played with a lot of heart and created a lot of pressure. And unfortunately, we wilted. And my only thought is that some of the holes that we identified might have been there at the beginning of the year under real pressure. You know, probably lacked. One in the midfield, lacked a little bit of class in the midfield, I thought, and lacked a marking forward. Those two issues were probably quite glaring in the end, but we'll leave that discussion for another podcast, guys, and Tuesday night we'll be back to lick the wounds a little bit more and maybe look a bit forward towards trade and draft week. We might have an announcement on Lever by then, or Charlie, or both. It all starts again in 2018.
Yeah, well, anyhow, congratulations to Richmond and Hardwick. They deserved it.
Yeah,
a
absolutely.
Sentence I thought I'd never get to say. Damien Hardwick, premiership coach.
Oh, no. Oh, Jesus. All right, let's leave it there, folks. Thanks very much to the people on the chat for joining us, and well done us for backing up, because we're all a bit flat. And we'll see you on Tuesday night for Tuesday Night Live.
Night all.
Good night all.